For more than 25 years, Liz Helgeson has been the smart voice for smart technology, the voice that millions of people throughout the United States and the world hear every day when they use their mobile phones, engage their interactive media for banking and financial needs, and are placed on hold when calling businesses. She is the voice on the move, guiding people who ride public transit and use their GPS or auto navigation systems to reach their destinations. In fact, our Prius, when we were messing with the Bluetooth settings on it, we heard this voice, and Daryl and I immediately turned to each other and said, "We think that's Liz." And we were so delighted to find out that we were right. The fact that one out of four Americans hear her voice on a daily basis gives you a sense of her talent and her success. But the fact that for 6 years now, Liz has unconditionally offered up her gifts to read the weekly wisdom passages sent out by Service Space really gives you a sense of her values and her spirit. She joined us back when Service Space was still known as Charity Focused and began recording wisdom passages for Awaken back in the days when it was still called iJourney. Through all of these and other evolutions, she has become an integral part of the volunteer team. In a community that deeply celebrates the power of humble, anonymous acts of service, Liz's contributions have been a shining example of selfless service. Tens of thousands have heard and been touched by the soulfulness of her voice and the insights it shares without knowing that it belongs to a mother of five who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and is one of the most gifted voice artists in the country. Today, we are so deeply grateful for this opportunity to really get to know the stories and the spirit behind the voice that we've cherished hearing for so long. So thank you, Liz, for joining us. I know everyone is really waiting eagerly to hear more of your voice.
Well, thank you. That was such a beautiful introduction, and it's a pleasure and honor to be here with you guys.
Oh, well, we have lots to talk about, but I thought one thing that might be nice for our listeners to hear is just, you know, now you've been on board so long that it's impossible for us to even imagine the weekly passages going out without that audio button. But looking back, can you share a little bit about what led you to approach us with your unique gifts? How did your path cross with ours?
Well, I'd love to share that. And I know immediately the answer is, at the time, I was creating my own inspirational, ringtones. I thought that while people were selecting all these ringtones and ringback tones for their phones, that I wanted to be like the Hallmark card of ringback tones and kind of use my voice to create like this whole library of inspirational messages that people could then download to their phones instead of, you know, music. And so I was just doing some research and looking for people that were already doing that, or inspirational, you know, people who were putting that out. And I came across you guys, and I thought, you know, wouldn't it be, you know, a great way for me to practice doing this just on my own, like just become that voice for people that were already putting out there, you know, inspirational quotes and inspirational passages, and just a short snippet. And, you know, you're probably going to hear me say this again in a bunch of different ways, but it felt, you know, I've always felt like in that introduction that was online about me, that, you know, sometimes you can hear something over and over and over again, but it just doesn't get you, or you don't hear it, or you don't hear it the way you need to hear it until it's said a certain way. And I just thought, if I could offer that to the world on some level, that that I could be of benefit, that I could help someone hear something a little bit differently, and it might make all that difference in their life. And I think, you know, I say that because that's happened to me, that somehow there's a piece of wisdom that you can hear and get over and over again, but sometimes either it's an experience or somehow someone says it a certain way, and even though you've heard it before, you get it in a different place. So I was just overjoyed to have, you know, to connect with you, and you offered me the opportunity to be the voice of the thought of the week.
I'm just thinking back to that, you know, that series of emails that was exchanged, and how surprised we were that someone, you know, who is so established in their field and so successful and so was really searching for this kind of an opportunity, and that so willing to offer it up in, you know, the spirit that we cherish, that spirit of unconditional offering. And really, you know, with volunteers, there's always a lot of unknowns. You don't know how long someone's energy, commitment, you know, enthusiasm is going to last. And it was just such a beautiful blessing to have you come forward, and to really, you know, to realize, we realized very quickly that how seriously you came to this opportunity. It wasn't just something that you took lightly, and, you know, you brought the full bearing of your experience, your wisdom, your commitment, the deep value you hold for this kind of service in the world. You know, it really comes through, and to us it's been such a gift to see that, you know, you're in it for the long haul, and to the benefit of all those listeners out there. I was wondering, go ahead.
No, you go.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, I have some things to share about my experience of reading the thoughts of the week.
Oh, this would be a great place, yes.
I figured. You know, I have to say that sometimes, let me say this. When I did, you know, in kind of giving me a little tickler of what we may discuss today,
mm-hmm.
I have these passages in my purse, in my car, in my journals. I print them, of course, to read them, and then I take them with me. Oh, I have to share this one with Susan. Oh, I have to share this one with Dory. Oh, I have to share this one with Emma, my daughter. Oh, I have to share that. You cannot imagine the impact that they have had in my life, every single one, even the ones that don't make sense, even the ones that I don't understand. And in that case, I can record one quickly because I get it and it just flows. Other times I have to get up and walk away. Mm-hmm. I can read it and then think about it, go take a shower, get myself ready for the day, come back, record it. Sometimes I've recorded it, gone away, and thought, oh, now I get it, and go back and re-record it. So the impact has been, and no matter what, the day is different after I read the thought of the week. Mm-hmm. So I bet you weren't expecting that kind of answer, but I have them all over the place. I have them in my right here in front of me. I have the one that Can You Love the One Who by Leah Pearlman,
mm-hmm.
that was recent. I don't think I have mm-hmm. the date on here, but just they inspire me, they move me, they anger me, you know, with what maybe I haven't yet realized mm-hmm. in myself or been able to, you know, challenges in me that I haven't, you know, been able to overcome, things in me, parts of me that I have, you know, demons I have defeated, just, you know, so I'm overjoyed. So it's just been this array of experiences and benefits to me that hopefully I've just given you a little piece of it, but that's how the thought of the week has impacted me.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It really comes through in your reading, and I was just thinking back to a couple of passages where we've actually even had a chance to hear you and your daughter reading together.
Yes, I know. It's been a long time.
Oh, we need to do more of those. Those
are
so magical.
Well, you know, she's a teenager now, so it's not quite as much fun for her.
That's true. Thinking that, you know, so many of us spend years and sometimes even a lifetime searching for our passion and purpose, you know, what we're here for. And it seems like you're one of those people who discovered their reason for being early on, and I was just wondering if you could share how you stumbled upon your calling. It obviously is something you were meant to do, and how do you view the work that you do?
Well, you know, even as a little girl, I was that friend. I was the friend that, excuse me, many of my friends at the time would go to for help, for support. I was outspoken. I had my own set of challenges, having, excuse me, been raised by just my mom. Mm-hmm. And my dad was gone before I was born. And being Jewish, and, you know, that was in an area where there weren't a lot of other Jewish people. Mm-hmm. So I always thought of myself as very different and looked for ways to be accepted. And I think that, you know, one of my survival skills and my strengths that I led with was leading, being outspoken. I was very social. And, you know, I just naturally gravitated as a teen to, you know, helping others, and then grew and attended school and studying human resources. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, loved and found such passion in discovering people's talents and strengths and then helping to guide them to do what they do best. And so that really says everything about who I am. I think that truly is a gift of mine, seeing the best in others and helping them to, you know, to cultivate their talent, helping them to become the best they can be, who God intended for them to be. And, you know, nothing that I do, mm-hmm. that never changes. That is in everything in my life. You know, every job, every conversation, every part of my being, that is, you know, my goal is to, it's not even a goal, it's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's human resources, helping people grow, helping people, you know, achieve their greatness, or in voiceover work, it's the same way. It's whether I'm, you know, helping someone decide what detergent to buy in an audio message, or helping someone get their bank balance. It's the exact same. My intent is always the same. It's to help you achieve or help you find what you need. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, at the risk of sounding corny, that is truly how I go about life.
It's a beautiful way, not corny at all. I was just thinking as you were talking that the field human resources, you know, that we often tend to think of it as recruitment, hiring, you know, policies, mm-hmm. and just a lot of administrative detail. And there's, when you really look at those two words, human resources, it is exactly what you described. It's working with people to help them discover their highest potential and to bring that forward in, you know, different contexts. And how fitting that that you would begin your career there. And I was also interested in this, you know, in the way that you were talking about your work, this idea of, you know, with whether you're at, you know, the voice at the bank or the voice on a navigation system, helping people find what they need. And, you know, in this world of increasing automation, having that human touch is, you know, it's rare, and it's growing increasingly rare. And so how do you, given the fact that you don't necessarily get to interact directly with the millions of people who hear your voice, how do you keep that sense of human-to-human connection alive for yourself?
You know, I can't help it. It's just an automatic, natural thing that I do, that when I'm sitting in front of a script, I'm usually thinking about a one-on-one interaction of whether I'm, you know, doing a training video for IBM or, you know, it's oftentimes, even, you know, in the corporate world, a lot of times clients will apologize for a boring script. And, you know, I can't tell you how that is so not the case for me, that every single script that I read, the whole purpose of it is that I reach the other person, that I'm connecting with that person, that the person be changed or moved or act or get something. So it doesn't matter what it is. I know that my desire, my goal, my interest, my intent is to relay and to affect another person. So, you know, when people are driving in their cars, I want to be their partner. I want them to want to interact with me. Mm-hmm. And one of the beauties of some of these speech systems that I build nowadays is that we can talk more naturally, and that the voices are not as robotic as they were, say, in the early 80s when speech and pressing one and pressing two just started to become socially acceptable. But nowadays, I get to be more me, and nothing thrills me more than that, of being able to be that guide, to be that part of your family in your car helping you get from A to B. So so I think of it as a one-on-one, you know, to really stay connected. And, you know, of course it's scripted. So, you know, my hope is that through all of the studying and, you know, preparation that goes into building a script, which is ultimately designed to meet the needs of others, that I'm doing that. That, you know, it's my hope that I am truly giving you what you need.
It's, you know, as you're talking about this, it's clear that there's it's a pretty spiritual perspective that you have on your work, and that idea that, you know, it's the intention and the attention that you bring to the script that really matters, not necessarily, you know, its dramatic content or its, you know, how exciting the plot is,
right,
so to speak. And that's powerful, because it, you know, that really is within each person's grasp to invest their every action, every word, with that kind of intention. And within the medium of sound that you work in, I mean, all of us, you know, have experience of the effect of sound, because it seems to be one of those things that's really very directly connected to the emotions and has this power to, you know, some sounds can soothe you, some sounds frighten you, some sounds anger you, some sounds deflate, others inspire, and your own voice has such a quality of warmth and serenity to it. And I'm sure you've heard this from countless people over your career, but wanted to ask if there were any special stories that are close to your heart about how your voice has touched the world.
My best friend says it's in the syllables. She, you know, she always says that when I share a thought of the week with her or share a particular project that I'm working on, that it's how you speak a syllable that changes things. And so, you know, for me, I don't really focus so much on a syllable, but on the bigger message. I want to make sure I'm communicating. But sometimes it is just in a syllable that someone hears something differently or feels something differently or gets the message differently. So, you know, that was very meaningful to me. And then on a more superficial level, you know, I love it when my husband will come across my voice when he's out somewhere or on hold, or, you know, I live in Atlanta, so I was making a reservation at a hotel in Boulder for a wedding in August, and the hotel had my voice on there, you know, so oftentimes people ride rapid transit here in Atlanta, they'll hear me and tell me. So I get just very, I feel a lot of joy when I you know, have those kinds of experiences with people.
Mm-hmm. How special. It's great.
You or like you just said when you talked about your Prius.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, that's so cool. You know.
Every time we hear the dial by number, we think of you, Liz. It's great. It's just, it's wonderful. And it's true. I think that you've invested some part of your spirit in you know, in those syllables. And so we do feel it, whether consciously or, you know, for the vast majority of people, it's something they register without, you know, fully being conscious of it. And it's a beautiful way, I guess, in to weave through people's lives. And I was just thinking too how it for most of us who don't necessarily, you know, when you're on hold and you're listening to an automated voice, there can be almost a sense of separation. You know, this it does feel like for that moment that you're talking to a machine, and then to hear you and to remember that, you know, there's a beating heart, there's a spirit, there's even behind that voice, that disembodied voice. It's a beautiful reminder to us to use those moments that we are on hold, or, you know, using these automated systems. They're all opportunities to practice just in the same way that you're practicing on your end.
I wish I could be the you know, online live with each and every caller. And I know that sounds, I don't know how that sounds, but it is the truth. I do imagine that when I'm doing my job.
Yeah.
You know, a real cute other story. Well, I don't know if it's cute, but when I was in 1996, when the Olympics were coming to Atlanta, I read in the newspaper that MARTA, Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, our trains, we're going to be implementing a system by which, as the train passes, it trips the system to announce the next stop, and that they hadn't found a voice for it yet. Mm-hmm. And when I read this article, I knew, and I know that this, you know, it could sound like ego, but it truly was from a different place, I believe, that I had to be the voice on that train. I could imagine people from all over the world needing the clarity, needing the crisp, needing the warmth, needing, you know, this is my city, and that has to be a professional, good, you know, clear-sounding, welcoming voice when the whole world came to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So that's a story from, you know, many years ago that that gave me joy that I could be, and I did. I called them, and I interviewed for it, and it's been there ever since.
what a great story. And I think, you know, I don't think any of us on this call will ever look at or listen to those voices in quite the same way again, because you bring such a new depth to it. I wanted to ask, just because it's so clear as you talk, that this element of giving, this element of, you know, being in service to the world and the people around you has been such a part of your life all along. And just wanted to know if you could give us a little, you know, glimpse of that, of your journey, and what the shaping influences were in your life, and who your greatest mentors and teachers have been.
Sure. You know, in thinking about my mentors, there are so many that were so important in my life. And I have to say, you know, my number one mentor would be my counselor. Her name is Esther Creek, and she has truly helped me to transform who actually began to give me the language and the language that I think, and the language that I use, and to sort of retrain my thoughts, my whole thinking process, that has really, really shaped my life over the last, I guess, 15 to 20 years. In conjunction with my recovery. I'm a recovery woman, and meaning that recovering from addiction of, I had an eating disorder when I was 23, and it's that whole 12-step program and that process of recovery is really that sort of the blueprint of the language of my counselor that has just permeated itself into every area of my life. And being Jewish, it just so happens that I've also studied Kabbalah with our rabbi, and all of it just matches. It's all in alignment with the 12 steps. So it's just a natural, easy way for me to, it all just kind of leads itself right back to my soul. Mm. And, you know, it just has deepened my faith. I would say deepened my faith in God. You know, I think, you know, the whole charity focus and reading the thoughts of the week and everything that I read that comes into my inbox it all just feeds that same, you know, growing language and conversation that I have with myself and with the world, and deepens my beliefs in every way. You know, I feel today so much more like nothing than I ever have before. My understanding of God is so completely gone. Like, I have so much less of an understanding of who God is, but yet the strongest faith I've ever had in my life. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does.
I feel so like I know that I know nothing, and I've never felt better about that in my life. You know, I feel so grateful that I know absolutely nothing, that I have no understanding of God, but just a rock-solid faith. So,
Thank you so much, first of all, for sharing your vulnerabilities and also the inspiration that comes from you having so beautifully transformed and, you know, worked through them from the inside out. And just hearing you, you know, I think that we're all in some way, shape, or form recovering, and we're all in recovery from that, you know, the darkness that is just a part of being human, and that there are gifts within that that can be tapped into with skillful, you know, work and commitment, which is obviously what you've done. And I was just thinking about how, you know, how profound it is that working through the framework that you did, the 12 steps, and, you know, working with your faith, it was something that didn't just address, you know, one problem, but just it permeated the whole of your life. And that's quite a powerful thing. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit more insight into what kinds of things were helpful for that transformation. You know, are there particular steps or particular practices that you did that helped kind of, you know, have you turn that curve and turn your life into this next level?
That's such a big question. I can't decide whether I want to say, you know, it's my faith in, you know, having a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, or, you know, doing all of the inventory work of really being able to look at. I think that I have to say that, you know, I had to have faith. I had to have that faith that I didn't always have. But then I think that, you know, that doing the inventory and really looking at my character defects and being able to, after, you know, really, really doing a thorough inventory, and then, oh, there that is, like just throughout the day, or, you know, days later or weeks later, I can start to identify that thinking, the how I think. And that's really where it all begins, is in my thoughts. And then being able to make a different choice from that awareness. Oh, there's that. That's what I do. And then being able to do something different. I know that's probably a very specific example, you know, without me giving you a specific time or that
Right. No, that is powerful, though. Just that, even just what you said of it all begins with your thoughts, you know, being able to come to that subtler and subtler awareness of cause and effect.
Oh, yeah.
And recognize where the seeds are being sown.
Very much so in recovery. It's not so much, you know, when you look at when something happens, when you can really, really look at where it began, it always begins in my head. So it's you know, it's a lot of work, and there's a lot that can be said about it. But in a nutshell, I think that faith, willingness to look at, you know, painful stuff, and then you know, willingness and desire to change, and walking through that. And, you know, I also have to say amends, and then, you know, where I have misstepped, being able to go to people and say, I'm sorry, and here's what I did, and you didn't deserve it, and, you know, just to be able to go back and clean up, and then be different. You know, living amends is also very, very, very powerful, and transformative.
Beautiful. Such big, big lessons for all of us, and yet they're practiced in such little, everyday, constant ways. Really, it's like building a muscle, I guess.
Yes.
And who are your teachers in today, in your current life? Your teachers and your inspirations.
I have a posse of women who are my guiding lights. And our rabbi, for sure, my counselor, my husband. My husband is my hero. And
tell us a little bit about him.
Oh, gosh. He's like a rock-solid, salt of the earth, amazing, strong, very disciplined, structured, rule keeper guy. I joke that he has one mood, but I think there's maybe two. So, you know, he's that guy.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I was just, you know, you're the mother of five children, a wife, a professional voiceover artist.
Four children. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Four. And then there's your inner child. So there you go.
I was thinking about who the fifth could be, because you know, I was thinking, well, it's either me or it could be our dog Tiki. So
nice. You know, it's clear that within the space of your day, you're juggling so many different roles. And what helps you find your balance within all of it?
Well, you know, it goes like this. It's first my relationship with myself and God. Then it's my relationship with my significant other, which is my husband, Bob. Then it's my children. Then it's my family of origin. Then it's my friends. Then my work and community. So I kind of, when my plate is so full, the first thing I do is I get with myself and God and meet those needs. Then it's the needs of my husband and my relationship there, and so on. So if I, you know, in all of my life, when it just sometimes can feel so overwhelming, that is what, all of a sudden, if I just attend to myself and God, everything else just seems to, the plate just seems to empty. That everything just seems to fall into place. And as long as I can take care of things in that order and keep that order, you know, that priority straight, nothing, you know, the overwhelm just seems to disappear.
There you go. How important to kind of have that clarity of where our deepest value lies, and to live in alignment with that. That does seem like a beautiful kind of rule to follow. I was wondering if there was any particular passage, or before we open it up to the Q&A for the rest of the listeners to add in their voices, if there was any favorite passage or poem or reflection that you'd like to share with our group?
There is, and I've actually had it on my desk for ever since we arranged this.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
this really says it all for me. And it's by a rabbi, V. Freeman, who writes a daily dose that I read. And it's called In All Ways. People imagine a place of godliness as a place for seriousness, a solemn place, a place that fills you with trepidation. The fact is, where there's God, there's joy. That is why our every moment is a moment to celebrate and fill with joy. Because every moment we're fulfilling our mission of bringing godliness into this world. Not just the obviously joyful matters such as meditation, study, prayer, and good deeds, but also regular mundane activities and the ways we earn an income and go about life are all ways by which we know God and bring God into our world. So that just says it all for me. You know, I just really believe and feel, you know, to my core that whatever I'm doing, it is that my goal is always to bring, to let it reach its highest potential. Truly, whether I'm stuffing and licking an envelope in volunteer work, I pray that that envelope and its message reach its recipient and inspire what God would have it inspire in that recipient. The same goes for the messages and passages that I read, that it reach its highest place, its highest purpose. And so whether it's my daughter as a young teen that, you know, whatever message I send or whatever silence I bring in just being with her, that all of it reach its highest purpose and highest potential.
Oh, it's so clear that you are an embodiment, a daily embodiment of that passage that you read. And it would be great to have you maybe send that over by email or something, because I think it's something that we'd love to share more broadly.
Oh, my pleasure.
And it just makes me reflect on the fact that it really was no accident, you know, that you and Service Spaces paths crossed in the way that they did. There's a really special way the universe has of bringing people together, and we're just so grateful that you are, and that you're doing what you are doing with such grace and constancy, Liz. So thank you for that.
You know, it's actually coincidental, or maybe not so coincidental, that you just talked about, you know, it being an accident or seeming like an accident with the Passover holiday just passing, and how, you know, I guess what Passover, at least the way that I've interpreted it, is that it's a demonstration sort of, at least within the Jewish faith, of how, you know, God can interfere in certain events in the world with his miracles, if he desires to you know, for his people, to take care of his people. And so what I'm curious about is, you know, your spirituality plays such a strong role in your life, and it's apparent in everything that you've been saying, and wanted to know sort of some of the origins of that. You know, why has your faith been so important to you? Or were your parents very religious? You know, was it something that just happened, you know, in your life? Was there a moment that kind of happened? Would love to hear about
that. Sure. You know that my family was, you know, not very religious. I went to Camp Shalom every summer, and so it was at Camp Shalom that I got my Judaism. But, you know, it was through recovery that I found spirituality, and just in wanting my children to both be bar and bat mitzvahed and searching for a synagogue, that I went to the Chabad here in our area, and just everything just, it kept sounding so much like recovery that it just felt like a right place for me. Like I started to hear about my religion in ways that I had never heard it expressed. There was so much joy there. There was so much, it just felt it like so home to me that I began taking classes there and just, you know, it just lit, it, I just felt so alive and like it shined such a light on all of the areas of myself that I had grown and developed, you know, through my recovery. It just all seemed to match and be in such alignment. And so it was easy for me to practice, whereas what I had believed to be Judaism and understood it as a child, which was really not correct, I just was able to leave that and really take part in my religion in ways that I never had. And again, please know that it's not perfect, but it allows me to connect. It was so nice to be able to connect my recovery and that spirituality with my heritage and, just really be a part, call myself a Jewish woman and be proud of it and, to honor that part of myself in a way that I never had before. I hope I answered that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I was thinking was, you know, in that you are the voice for so many things, and I'm curious what that is like at home, you know, especially with your children. And then the reason I said, I just think back to my childhood and the different voices that I heard from my parents, and especially when I didn't do something or I did something I wasn't supposed to do, and how, you know, the power of voice and how, you know, you can intend it to do mean something or whatnot. So I'm just curious about, you know, how your voice changes when you're actually not recording.
Oh, that's funny. This is my voice with my family. This, what you're hearing now, I do change it a little bit when I do, you know, voiceover work, you know, especially long systems and stuff. But it's funny, you know, years ago I did a series of baby videos with a company called the Brainy Baby Company. And they were, you know, left brain, right brain, can you find the bear in the clouds? And, you know, and so my children were little at the time. Emma was like 2. And I played them for her, thinking, oh, this will be great. She'll have her own mom be her video person. And she cried and cried. She somehow couldn't figure it out. It was very upsetting to her. And I thought it would be just, you know, I had these visions of her just being so cackly and happy getting to hear her mom, but it didn't work out quite that way. So they don't really, you know, they think it's a cool job. They think it's really, you know, they think it's really, it, when I love certain things, I will make them all listen to something I've done. And they don't really get, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's real good, Mom, you know. So it's a cool thing, but then when they're, but it's also just kind of no big deal.
Okay, so this is somewhat related to what Matt just asked. I was just curious. I've heard that actors have to do that, like, depending on what role they're playing, they kind of need to get in that space in order to portray that character. So I'm just wondering if you kind of do that, like take some time and put yourself in that space so that you can relay the message, or do you just always come from the intention of helping people and reaching out to them, and that's the primary space that you come from?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of different ways that I prepare for my work. And it often depends on what I'm sitting down for. If I am sitting down and I'm going to read, you know, interactive voice response messages for a speech system, you know, I have a certain system or routine that I do with just getting my voice in the right place. When I'm going to be reading the thought of the week or are doing another kind of job that may require me to have an opinion. I have a series of exercises that I do for that as well. I have rants that I've written that I read that help me be mostly, you know, sound most like myself, so that you can get me when I'm reading that piece. There's some things I do that are voice related and things that I do that get me in the frame of mind to read that particular piece. So it depends on what I'm reading. But yes, there are a series of things that I do, that some of which I've learned from my voice coach, some that I've worked, I've had some professional voice coaching in terms of health, voice health coaching that helped me and my vocal cords be in the right place. I also gargle a lot with salt water and eat raw carrots sometimes prior to sessions that help me not have to be so conscious of if my voice isn't working properly. That can affect my read. So there's a lot that I have to think about to get ready to read.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I didn't even think about this idea of having a voice coach. It's very, very interesting. I mean, I guess, you know, our voices do change, you know, over time or whatnot, and so trying to keep that sort of level of consistency.
It just made me think about that movie that I saw. Was it about the speech, some president's speech or something like that?
Oh, yes.
Well, I don't
the King's Speech, I think.
The King's Speech, yeah. Oh, yeah, he had a voice coach, right? I remember that when Amit mentioned the voice coach.
But I will say this, too, though, that it is an inside-out job that, you know, for me, the more clean and well and healthy and whole that I can be, the more I can bring to a piece of copy that, you know, that there's a vulnerability sometimes that's needed for a specific piece. There's a realness that, you know, when it comes to touching other people, it's, you know, wanting to touch your child within, I have to be able to show you my child within. So, you know, there is, you know, when I specify the two different kinds of voice coaching, you know, there's one coach that works on the inside part and the other coach that works on the outside part. And then there's my counselor who works really deep inside. And, you know, so there's all of those different pieces to me that go into what I'm going to share with you. So it's all very, very important. And that, there again, I'm just going to focus on the thought of the week and how personal I make it.
Liz, this is Viral. Hi.
Hi, Viral.
Oh, wonderful to hear your reflections this morning and to actually just be on live mode with you. So this is great. Thanks so much for sharing. I wanted to ask this: what you just shared about, you know, from the inside out, just really briefly. I recently had an interesting moment, and then I'll ask the question following that. So, you know, I volunteer at meditation retreats, and as I was about to go to one, you know, I was meeting with our I work at a hospital, so our CEO. And just kind of, she casually asked, "What are you doing? Where are you going?" And it just blossomed into this kind of serendipitous conversation, and where she was asking about meditation, and, you know, what is it, and you know, how do you see it, and what role does it have, what effect does it have, all of these different questions. And it was funny because at the end of that brief conversation, she said, "Wow, you know, I feel different just as a result of, you know, hearing you talk about this process and in this very moment." And then right, you know, spontaneously right back to that that sentiment. I said, well, I actually feel different talking about it as well. And, you know, there, I've noticed that my voice has changed from earlier in, when we were just talking about our work. And I was wondering, so as I reflect on that, I was wondering, you know, you have just spent so much time, as you described, preparing and actually recording and almost like meditating on voice and sound. And I wonder if you have any insights on what is it about voice, or if you can talk us through any reflections you've had about the role of sound and the role of voice. And early on you talked about how, you know, it hits you in a place that's different. Just wondering if you have any further insights after having kind of reflected on this for a long time that many of us might subconsciously know but may not have really fully understood. So just wondering if anything comes up for you.
You know, something about when you just told your story that made me think of something that I can't remember if I read it on as a thought of the week, but it was about sharing our stories and how it changes us as well as the person that we're talking with or sharing with. Mm-hmm. I will say that, and this may be a little bit more technical than you're asking for me to be, but I think when in my process of getting myself warmed up or getting myself ready to read, you know, a piece of copy, that the purpose of reading, you know, something I've written that's about me, that touches me, it's almost like if you're about to go run, you have to stretch and you have to get your body ready and you have to, you know, it's like when you stretch your arms all the way out the first time and mm-hmm. then bring them back in and then stretch them out again, you go further. Mm. And so with each, you know, when I read and when I'm kind of touching that note and, oh, this time I'm talking about that and I'm telling you about my opinion about when people drive slow in the left lane or, you know, whatever silly rant I decide that I'm going to read to get me in touch with me, my opinion, it's like exercising. It's like, you know, practicing touching places that I haven't touched in a while. And then it's like awakening all these little pieces of me that then when I go and read that piece of copy, you're going to get it. You're going to get all those little crevices and nooks and crannies that make me, me. And hopefully the goal is for it to be a more full-bodied read, a more, you know, I can touch you better when I touch that place in me first. So I don't know if that's kind of mm-hmm. way out there, but it's like exercise. It's like touching and stretching and reaching and, you know, and that, like when you talk about the more you talked, the more comfortable you were with that message or that part of you. Even now, I think I'm talking differently than I did when we first opened this conversation at 9 o'clock mm-hmm. because I've touched, when I was talking to you just now, I was stretching and I'm, you know, just kind of letting myself loose more. And so if I'm in a session, a voiceover session that's being directed, I want my director to meet me there mm. instead of where I was at 9 o'clock. So, mm. you know, there's a great purpose in stretching and talking and mm. and touching those places of me and awakening all of that before I actually sit down to record something.
Mm. How do you, I'm just wondering as a kind of a follow-up is, just about what you're talking about in the professional context. I mean, I'm reflecting on my own instance that I shared earlier and how, you know, there was a difference between where I was and even how my voice was. And that was all unconscious. I mean, you know, it wasn't explicitly something that I had planned or something that I was trying. It was just this natural progression as I started to talk about like you said, something that hits you at a deeper place in yourself, you know, that changes how you express it and what space you express it from and how that manifests. How do you, because you just talked about in your own case, and you're, you know, working with someone, let's say they're the kind of the sound, the voiceover director, or they're trying to get to a certain place, and you've got your own inner process for getting to the place you know where you need to come from. How does that, do you find that it's, what is the interpersonal nature of that, where, you know, someone else's intention or someone else's sensitivity to this may be lesser or different than where you are, and how do you negotiate internally with that in your professional work? Because you obviously come from such a deep place, and you really see it to be your meditation, a form of your meditation, and you see it as a practice. And I'm sure there are times when the folks who you're working with don't always have that same sensibility.
You just give them what they want.
Hmm.
I mean, that's kind of in a nutshell. It's, you know, you are absolutely correct that there's a certain, at times there's a certain read that someone's looking for, and you massage what you are doing and listen and take that direction and go where they're trying to lead you to go.
Hmm.
And that is part of the beauty of voiceover work is being able to hear and internalize and manifest the vision of that director and of that piece and where they want it to go. And, you know, there are times when I may disagree, but it's, you know, very important to me that, you know, I'm there to do this job for them and to reach and meet the need that they have. And so that's where I steer my energy. You know, there are times when I read something before I hook up with a director and I may have my own take on it and it's not theirs. So I have to, you know, find their mission, their purpose, and help them achieve that.
That's beautiful. I mean, there's a certain, and Amit, feel free to cut me off because I can keep going in this mode.
No worries. No, this is, I'm smiling listening to this conversation right now. Please continue.
Okay, so I'll stop after this, or maybe not. We'll see. I think what that brings up, Liz, is just this idea of kind of according with the conditions and really looking for the most skillful way to be of service, and oftentimes that may not be, you know, it's an interaction. It's like what you said in sharing your story. It's always a two-way street, and there's something that happens in that interaction. And you know, based on that, you may just go in a different direction, and there's something really selfless about not being stuck to needing to have it manifest in the way you envisioned it, and instead being dynamic with that and being able to really take into account where someone else's sensibilities are, even if you don't see them as being as refined or being as developed. That's powerful to just be in that mode of service to say, okay, you know, I really am just going to be, I'm wanting to kind of make your vision come to life, and if that's how you see it happening, then let's go with that. And there's a certain element of, you know, lightness and playfulness in that as well. That's
you know, the same is true about the thought of the week. I mean, look at it this way. Every week I'm reading someone else's thought, someone else's story, their intent. They have a whole different purpose and mission, and I am interpreting that for them. And, you know, I also pray that I don't offend, you know, the genius, amazing, beautiful, you know, sentiments of people from all over the world that I get to record every week. But, you know, it's the same thing. I just, when I send it off, I say a prayer. May it reach its highest purpose. May, mm-hmm. you know, this person's intent, you know, be received. You know what I'm saying? It's like
Yeah. And there's something co-creative about that too, right? I mean, where, you know, obviously there is, like you said, there's that person's, the inspiration with which they express that, and then, you know, it interacts with the inspiration with which you re-manifest that in another medium, and then there's, you know, the translation over into the, when a person who's hearing it, you know, it's all kind of this very fluid, and co-creative process, and that's really beautiful that you really see it like that and interact with it in a way that is still authentic to you, but is humble and is, you know, really trying to serve that original intent. So that's really great.
Thank you. You know, once it's distributed, I listen again in my car or on my phone, someplace other than my studio. Usually once I'm done with it and then Jared edits it and cleans it up and puts spacing, you know, differently. When I'm driving around, I want to hear it again, and I usually ask myself, did I get it?
Mm.
You know, do I get it? Do I get it?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a little bit more, maybe not necessary, but I, you know, I'm not done with it when I'm done with it. You know, I still want to hear how it hits the world, and I'm including myself with the rest of the world when I'm driving around, because I assume that a lot of times people may do that
mm-hmm.
they may hear it in their car or mm-hmm. on a train or on a plane or in a boat, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, no, there's something really empathic about that, and there's also something, you know, if we reflect more broadly and just in volunteerism in general, this idea that when you're able to actually connect your external, you know, service, external manifestations of this intent, that when that process is reflective and it's course corrective and it's continuous and it's, you know, it's internal, you know, this process that you have of like, actually, where am I with this? You know, it becomes a process for you. And when that manifested service action is connected to that internal dynamic and reflective process, I mean, I think it's all the more powerful as a result of that. And, you know, that may not, I mean, obviously, you know, once the thought has been recorded, one would think, okay, well, now it's recorded, it's not going to change. I mean, what difference does it make whether you listen to it and are still reflecting on it and meditating on it? But, you know, in the next thought and in some kind of what I hear when I hear that is that it's really connecting your journey to your service work. And I think that's such a critical aspect of what makes it so compelling and so powerful and continues to touch people. You know, there are people who will write in and say, you know, we haven't, if let's say there has been a technical issue, and it's happened only a very few times, but people writing back and saying, oh, it's not the same. I don't have that reflective moment to really hear Liz read it. And so it creates this interesting field for people to kind of connect in their own reflection of that passage. So it's really neat.
Well, it was so nice when there's a technical issue, because at least I know somebody listened. I think recently there was somebody that complained, and I was so happy that that she was not happy. You know, I think she might have been like an agent or something of a woman who does put her voice to her work, and it was not her voice, it was my voice, and she was clarifying it or something. And I was so happy that somebody actually listened.
Well, we you know, I know that Nipun has these statistics on the back end, and I know that it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have actually listened over the years, so it's quite amazing.
But it's okay, too, if it's just one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the other thing is that, you know, when you're connected to that process within yourself, then it stops mattering. You're not doing it for the impact
right.
at the external level. You're really doing it to serve, but you're doing it to have your own, you know, process as you manifest that service. And then it just brings us all together another level of freedom because you're no longer bound by needing to create this explicit effect out in the world. You know that the effect is going to happen just based on its own laws. I mean, there's not anything that that we have to worry about with that. So that's awesome.
So, Liz, I had a question for you. I was curious about how you became comfortable with your own voice when you started out. And, you know, what comes to mind is, you know, I've thought about moments where I've heard myself on an answering machine or a voicemail, and I kind of have that knee-jerk reaction, like, is that really how I sound? Oh, my gosh. And so I'm curious how it is that you had sort of come across that and how you felt comfortable that this is, you know, this is what you do and the impact that it has on so many people.
Okay, well, at the risk of sounding egotistic or I love the sound of my voice. I love hearing myself. I love when I come across my voice. I'm delighted by my voice. I love the way it sounds. I love how it makes me feel. And I never had that issue. I never felt that way. Okay. That I don't like what I hear or when I hear myself recording, you know, recorded. So I'm very grateful for feeling that way. I'm very grateful for the gift just of liking my voice. So so that's my answer.
Do you have a favorite voice?
Do I have a favorite voice? I don't have, you know, when I'm in a groove, when I'm doing a session and I make very few errors and can go for long periods of time and can, you know, when I'm, I think we can all relate to that, you know, when you just have this amazing session or, you know, whatever you do most well and it, you know, wows the director, or you hit something a certain way that, and everyone is pleased, and that you've met everyone's needs, and you meet the engineer's needs. I don't know that it's a specific voice sound, but it's a way of being, or a way of working, and a way of impacting and making a difference all the way around that I love. I just love. I mean, it just. You know, then I go upstairs and have my lunch, and that's my day. You know, I just love that experience of being in that groove, of being in a flow and really hitting it, nailing it.
You definitely nailed it this conversation. you know, one question that I know that Kunshan loves to ask, and, you know, we'll close out with this one, is that, you know, you've been of just such great service to so many people, whether it's the organizations that you've done voices for, or in particular for doing the wisdom readings for Service Space, and not enough can be said about that. Is there any way that we can be of service to you?
You mean in what way?
Meaning, like, you know, is there any way that we can be of support to you or a particular project that you might be working on or...
Gosh, thank you for that. I think you already are of service to me. In that I get the opportunity every week to be a part of sharing my voice and, you know, this whole ecosystem and community is my gift. So it is already I'm already being served.
Thank you so much, Liz. This has
been such
a joy.
I want to add that even on all of the Awaken emails that come in, all the comments that get posted, the nonsensical comments to the eloquent comments, they're all of service to me. I get something from all of them. Some of them I don't read. Some of them I happen to read. Some of them I intentionally read. And they all mean so much. Everything, you know, every part of this system is of great service to me. So thank you.
Thank you. And just before we close, and Amit will do the closing honors, but I just wanted to share a quote that I came across from Khalil Gibran that, that to me seems to really embody some of what you're talking about. And the idea that, you know, we manifest in different ways in the world. We manifest through thought, through speech, through action, and some of those things are subtler than the others. And really what we're manifesting is essence. And in the end, it's not, you know, it's not our the job titles that we carry or the, you know, the accomplishments that we have on our resume, but it's that essence that we send out into the world. And the quote is simply this: a voice cannot carry the tongue and the lips that gave it wings. Alone must it seek the ether. And alone, and without her nest, shall the eagle fly across the sun.
Wow.
So thank you for
beautiful
for sending wings across the sun for so many of us.
Oh. Thank you. Mm-hmm.